Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless
you. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin. Nice look at this week in the Capitol and politics. And before we go there, Wisi was there is especially interesting. A couple things you need to know. The first speaker is a Republican candidate for governor who crashed the forum in Eau Claire of 11 Democratic candidates. That's the first speaker. Then, former lawmaker and member of the Elections Commission, Dean Knudsen, calls the John Doe invasion of privacy the worst in U.S. history. Representative Rob Swearingen says it's time to consider lowering the drinking age from 21 to 19. And then we go to the, let's see now, I got to go to my script here. UW campuses get Narcan. Sorry for the delay. And Ron Johnson says this morning in Milwaukee why I'm going to vote for the tax reform package. So, wish I was there.
Hello, thank you for having me. My name is Ryan Kaysen. First off, I want to start out with this. I don't know what you heard, but Jesus does love you unconditionally. Secondly, I am running for governor in order to end abortion and homosexual marriage. Thank you.
The thing that was, again, dismaying to me in reading that Department of Justice report is just the lax and unprofessional manner in which all those private personal records that had been collected and should have been kept in absolute confidence and secrecy, that they were handled in just such an inadequate, unsuitable manner. I consider it the most chilling example of an invasion of private citizens' rights, probably in the United States history.
If a Democrat is elected governor, What advice would you give she or he in terms of Foxconn going forward, Senator?
I would give them the advice to review the contract carefully and to look for ways to look at transparency and accountability and stronger language of clawbacks that could be instituted. And concerns that if this does not materialize to the growth and the size that has been promised, how do we recapture that investment on behalf of the taxpayers?
You know, we're the lowest in the country. What would be a fair rate for a public defender?
I would say $100 an hour. I think that would be a significantly below market rate that would attract competent attorneys across the state to take these cases.
Why is it time to lower the drinking age from 21 to 19?
The reason now might be the time for the discussion is with the current administration in Washington, President Trump, there's been a lot of talk about block grants. If he does start block granting transportation money back to the states, then maybe it might be time that the federal blackmail part of the drinking age might go away, and so now is the time to have that discussion. Let Wisconsin decide if 21 is still working.
It helps us address this opioid crisis, and since we're located all around the state and engage students from all over the place, it fits in with a part of our shared commitment to the HOPE agenda. So the collaboration with the Department of Justice and Adapt Pharma is really an important step to us in supplying our police departments and our obviously staff at the universities with this Narcan treatment.
Why are Wisconsin counties suing?
Yeah, that's a good question, Steve. I mean, because our pharmaceutical companies are often thought of as the companies that create some of the, solutions to the ills of humanity. We believe that the manufacturers purposely withheld information regarding the addictive nature of opioids. What that resulted in is doctors and hospitals and other medical professionals prescribing opioids and people becoming addicted. And as a result of that addiction, we as counties have incurred costs.
I think it's indisputable that the tax package that we probably will pass, hopefully on Tuesday, is positively pro-growth. Growth will easily make up the revenue that it's being statically scored as losing and will benefit every American because, again, we are at full employment. So again, in the end, I'm going to be absolutely voting for this, happy to do so, but then also recognizing that it doesn't fix all our problems, completely monitor it, and try and address those problems moving forward.
JR, the fallout from Attorney General Schimmel's report released last week continued in a big way last night when the Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, wrote a letter to Mike Haas, the Acting Administrator of the State Elections Commission, and Brian Bell, the Administrator of State Ethics Commission. I'm just going to read two sentences. Unfortunately, due to past errors in judgment by leadership and staff at the recently disbanded Government Accountability Board, there are still widespread concerns over partisan influence remaining at the top of the Ethics Commission. You and the Elections Commission, you have lost the confidence of our caucuses to be an impartial administrator. Big development.
Yes. It's interesting, talking to conservatives this week, I mean, the GOP was supposed to clean up the rot, in their words, of what was going on with this investigation and how election ethics were being overseas. They're coming to the realization of they don't trust the staffs that were carried over.
Yeah.
Without that trust, it doesn't matter what the structure is, you still have a distrust between Republicans and these administrators. And now you add in this level, this layer from the John Doe leak investigation, and it's made it very difficult. Now, I've talked to some people who think that these guys should just walk away because their lives will be made miserable by lawmakers. And oh, by the way, they can put the purse strings, these agencies, and the Elections Commission is asking for three new staff positions to be authorized to handle elections. But the commissions themselves, have dug in saying they have confidence in these guys and they don't think they should resign. So how do you resolve that? What's going to give in that standoff?
And the statement issued only a few minutes ago by Mike Haas was one sentence. I look forward to continuing the important work of administering elections on behalf of all Wisconsin residents and taxpayers, and I call on the legislature to support that work. But go back to something you just said. These legislative leaders must sign off on the budget for the Elections Commission and the Ethics Commission, which elections wants three more people coming up. But another thing, let's look at some timing here. If Mike Haas leaves as the acting administrator of elections, we are less than a year away from a major election, U.S. Senate, Gov., etc. So how stable, how reliable can the Elections Commission be if you have a staff turnover of the administrator and their chief counsel, Nathan Judnick, who we'll get into in a minute?
Good question. And then these guys can't go in and just say, you have to fire this. But they can't cut that one person out of the budget, right? They do positions, but not a person. How are they going to resolve this? What's going to happen going forward? Every hearing you have now with the Ethics Elections Commission involved, there may be some questions that come up related to this. We had Steve Noss, who's called for four employees, two from each commission to resign. He co-chairs the Joint Committee for Review of Administrative Rules. They had a hearing this week in which the Ethics Commission appeared for him. There could be some fireworks going forward about this if things don't resolve themselves sometime soon.
Well, and I want to go back. Let's look at page 40. Let's talk about the role of Brian Bell and Mike Haas in the Schimmel report. Page 40, the Attorney General says, Mr. Bell is one of those who, quote, had custody of GAB John Doe documents at the time the leak occurred. When you look at page 15, now we're to talk about Mike Haas, and the Attorney General's report says, refers to Mike Haas as one of the core team members here, along with Shane Falk, former GAB attorney, Kevin Kennedy, GAB administrator, Jonathan Becker, supervisor, Nathan Judnick. Now let's talk about Judnick, because he worked for the GAB and now he is the legal counsel for the Elections Commission.
He's one of nine people that Attorney General Schimmel has recommended to have contempt proceedings begin against him over this, the handling of these documents. And another pushback we've seen from the Ethics Commission in particular is how the documents have been handled since they came into existence, right? They're saying, look, this report from Brad Schimmel doesn't account for all these steps they took to clean things up, that basically they inherited a mess, one other way to clean it up, and therefore they're not getting credit for what they've done from what Schimmel put out there.
Now let's go back to 3 days earlier, and I want to go back to something you alluded to. At their first meetings since the Schimmel report came out, the Elections Commission said this: nothing in that report has caused us to question our support of Interim Administrator Michael Haas. We remain unanimously in support of our current position, position and continue to seek his appointment as a permanent administrator. And the Ethics Commission Chair and Vice Chair, Holbrooks and McCallum.
Katie McCallum, yes.
Yes, 1D, 1R. DOJ report, quote, has errors and inaccuracies, excuse me, our staff promptly provided all requested records based on each successive chair's, each successive search criteria DOJ identified. Mr. Schimmel, one sentence response. The Wisconsin Department of Justice stands by the Attorney General's report. So you had pushback on Tuesday and Wednesday from these two commissions whose handling of the DOJ records were blistered in the Schimmel report, and now superseding that is the call from Voss and Fitzgerald.
And one thing to kind of illustrate this kind of disagreement about the facts, during the course of the investigation about the leak, DOJ was talking to Brian Bell and Dave Berger, who's a counsel for the Ethics Commission. They had several conversations, and then they wanted to turn over documents, and they wanted to do additional conversations separately. DOJ says that was them invoking their Fifth Amendment right to counsel.
Yes.
Ethics Commission says, no, they talked to us. We told them we want somebody present because, Berger, you're our counsel, and we want to have a legal counsel present for any conversation like this.
Right.
We're the ones saying these guys should have counsel. They didn't invoke Fifth Amendment rights. We stepped in. Now, it may be splitting hairs to people, but that is part of the disagreement about the facts in the case.
Yeah, it is. And let's go back to the Senator Nass struck first. He said, I no longer have confidence in, which means resign, Michael Haass, Brian Bell, and David Berger,
and
Judnick. Okay. JR, I spent some time this week looking into the contempt process because now, as you said, the Attorney General has referred 9 individuals, 5 of them ex-GAB staffers, to Brown County Judge Kendall Kelly. So I looked at him. He was named in 202 a judge by former Governor Scott McCallum. Mm-hmm. He's been reelected 3 times. And I asked DOJ, what are you seeking? What type of sanctions are you seeking under Chapter 785, which is the contempt? And they won't tell me. Mm-hmm. They said that's under a sealed letter. But I also found out, when you look at 785, and I checked with an attorney, it gives judges fairly broad authority in contempt proceedings. They can lock them up, they can fine them, they can order past restitution of damages. So what are you looking for as this spins into the contempt process?
Well, Brad Schimmel, we asked about this at a news conference this week. He said this contempt proceeding might bring more details to light about how these records are handled. He was asked, well, if you get anything out of that, might it reopen the investigation? He said, we'll be looking for what comes out. So how do these guys proceed with this? And do they push back? What evidence do they offer to push back against the DOJ report to proclaim their innocence or to say this didn't happen that way, that he's distorting what happened and how we handle these records?
Should we also talk about the process that under which Chief Justice Rogenczak named Judge Kelly, the fifth John Doe?
The previous judge had tweeted about the investigation and has realized this might be an issue. And then, by the way, too, like with this contempt, you know, Shane Falk, who we've communicated with via email, he has said things like, look, I left 2 years before this leak happened. The DOJ report tries to place a lot, it doesn't say who's to blame, but pins a lot of this what happened around Shane Falk. He's a central figure in that report. And he's saying, look, I was gone for 2 years. How can you even suggest that I was involved, for what's worth?
Well, let's say something we said again last week. The Schimmel report said the leak did not come from the court system, and it did not come from Special Prosecutor Schmitz, which even more makes the GAB staffers, the core prosecution team of Falk, Kennedy, Becker, Judnick, and Mr. Falk's assistant, and Haass, the focus of it.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I was surprised. Were you surprised when Politico ran this story based on a number of sources? And they said, quote, despite several landmark legislative wins this year and a better-than-expected relationship with President Donald Trump, House Speaker Paul Ryan, Wisconsin congressman, has made it known to some of his closest confidants that this will be his final term as Speaker. The expectation of his impending departure has escaped the hushed confines of Ryan's inner circle and permeated the uppermost echelons of the GOP. Do you believe he's leaving?
I try to be surprised by anything, so I can see why that might happen. If you look at Paul Ryan's history, he always says, I don't ever want to be Speaker, right? I was kind of thrust upon him.
Yeah.
So he was forced in the role. He didn't want the role. He prefers to deal with you know, policy, like the tax overhaul that he's on the verge of passing. His big goals or career goals were what? Tax overhaul and social, the safety net reform, welfare program reform. That may be the next thing they take up. If you check those things off, what's there left to do for Speaker Ryan, who is 47, he turns 48 in January. His father passed away at 55. He has three young children. He wants to spend time at home. You can see the formula of why this story came out. What's been interesting in talking to people is why it's coming out now, because there are people who are kind of on the periphery of Ryan world saying his inner circle wouldn't want this story out now because it weakens his hand politically. Paul Ryan has got a big agenda for this next year. Also has to raise a lot of money to protect the Republican majority. Any oxygen taken up by his possible successors lining up votes by speculation about his future takes away from those other things. This is not the best story for him to have out there right now about what's happening on the verge of another vote on the tax bill. And then he, at least he wants to, take the other programs. So what's this do in that regard? Two, there was a Huffington Post story out the night before the Politico piece that also raised suggestion that maybe Ryan would step down like after passing some of these big bills and just be done.
Get out early?
The problem with that is Paul Ryan had $10 million in the bank at the end of the last reporting period. Randy Bryce has become a very prolific fundraiser as a challenger. If anybody else stepped into that race, you would give possibly that person in a tougher position against Randy Bryce. Now, Ryan's got issues with his approval numbers in the district because he's become a national figure and stuff, mm-hmm. but he'll be well-financed, much better financed than anybody else running for that seat. So one of the implications of the political piece was he'd run in 18 or he'd retire after the elections, like get through this election cycle and then be done. What's that mean? He's going to be on the ballot again and then like resign after he might win re-election? Another thing is, if this is all, you know, predicated upon the idea of Ryan and Republicans keeping the majority, if they lose the majority, it's not uncommon for speakers to say, okay, you know, we lost, I need to go away.
Right.
So if they lost majority in November, either way, that might be a way for Ryan to say, I'm done.
But one thing you and I do is we look carefully at how the people close to Ryan react to these stories like this. And his spokesman's called it pure speculation. Yep. Governor Walker tweeted that he talked to Paul Ryan. And do I have this quote right? Ryan, quote, isn't going anywhere?
Yep.
Do I have that?
Yes. Don't forget that John Boehner, up until the morning of his resignation, had people saying he was not leaving.
Okay.
So, I mean, this is, we're all talking about a story reported by other people, right? And I've talked to people, my sources a little bit this week. But let's be honest, Wisconsin media, we're at arm's length from Paul Ryan in Washington, D.C. That power structure is out there, not here. And while we all have our Ryan sources and people who are close to him, that's not this inner circle, necessarily, that are really part of these big decisions. So it might be Ryan, his wife, and his chief of staff who know for sure the real story is. We don't know. Which brings back to that question of, if the inner circle really knows what's going on, why would they leak it? Why would they tell anybody about it? Because that would hurt Paul Ryan.
So, I was surprised by the Politico piece. Sounds like you were too, or had you heard rumblings?
No, I mean, I'm surprised. I see from talking to people the formula that you reach that conclusion. And I'm not trying to say it's not going to happen, but there are things that are inconvenient for Paul Ryan right now to have the story out.
Okay, you spent some time waiting outside the closed assembly Democratic caucus mm-hmm. this week. And they took up debating Representative Josh Zebnick, a Milwaukee Democrat, been there since 2003, accused, alleged of kissing two women who didn't want to be kissed.
Without their consent at political events 2011, 2015.
Okay, he came, and I'm quoting you guys, I'm going to find a way to continue to do my job regardless, but the person who challenged him 2 years ago in 2016 mm-hmm. and only lost by
153 votes, 143, something like that.
Right. She has announced he gets them. Zebnick has been stripped of his committee assignments. What do you look for him to do?
Well, the caucus has been having a debate about where his job executive fit in, if he should at all. From what I can pick up, there are people who don't want him in the caucus. I talked to Jimmy Anderson last week, said he didn't think he should be in the caucus anymore. He was the first guy to call for Zebnick to resign.
Right.
But he said that's up to leadership. After the caucus, leadership was tight-lipped about what they had to talk about. But it is clear that there is some kind of divide in that caucus about where Zebnick should be. Now, Zebnick pointed out, I talked to him, that there are only a handful of days left in the calendar for the assembly anyway. Why push him out? Why just let him do his job until then? Now he's going to seek re-election next fall. He'd be up on the ballot in August for the primary. So he hasn't said what to do with that, but just let it kind of be for now and come back. And also, there's also this sentiment of, what's the standard going to be? You know, what do you have to have? Do you have to have a complaint filed against you? Is it enough to have a story written about allegations about you? Like, what's the standard going to be for everybody in the caucus going forward? There's also this bigger picture issue for the caucus of the issue of sexual harassment and misconduct in general, of where does it stand on that? How will people treat it? There are female lawmakers, aides, lobbyists who will tell you stories about things that have happened to them.
You and I have heard
they
them.
Don't like.
Yep.
So how do you deal with that? Now, the political piece to all this is that Marissa Bell Cabrera yep. announced again. Last time, like these Milwaukee primaries, some of them are very low turnout, like a couple thousand voters. So even though she lost by 150 votes roughly, it was like 53% for Zepnik. If you have a motivated group out to work that primary, you can see where Zepnik could have a hard race on his hands, right, coming forward. Will the ADCC, the political arm of the Assembly America Caucus, would it spend money for him? Would it withhold resources from Zepnik? Who could he rely on for help to raise money or to get out there and do doors? It's, you know, politically he's in a very bad spot right now, what's going on.
After that, after he left that caucus, he was asked to leave that caucus. Mm-hmm. You looked him in the eye. Tell me about his demeanor. I mean, is he remorseful? I mean, how did he appear? He said he's sorry.
Not that that time I talked to him, but he said before in statements that he's sorry about what happened. He was drinking at the time, and that he doesn't recall exactly what happened. He says he's sober now. He's going through some difficult times personally. His father, he says, on his deathbed. But Zepnik seemed to be in a position where he thought, let me just do my job and serve my constituents. It's their call where I should be. He's resisted calls to step down. That's not going to happen, from what I can tell. Showed no signs of changing his mind about that.
Right.
But again, for the caucus, so how do you address this and what's going to be? Because if you demand, you know, a certain standard on this issue, everybody will be judged going forward on that standard. That can be a hard line to draw sometimes.
That's true. Okay, new subject. I love the way you guys at WIS Politics follow all these campaign finance numbers. but I was especially taken this week when you reported that four Republican candidates in the special elections have loaned or given their campaigns, I think it's a total is $280,000. Shannon Zimmerman, who is now a state representative, loaned his campaign for the 10th Senate District. The primary, by the way, is next Tuesday, yep. the 19th. $184,000. $184,400. Representative Adam Jarko gave his campaign $50,000, and it's Zimmerman versus Jarko.
The GOP nomination.
In the 10th Senate District. And then the 58th Assembly District, there's a special because of the death of Representative Gannon. Steve Stanek loaned his campaign $20,000, and Rick Gundrum loaned his campaign $16,500. Mr. Gundrum is the Waukesha County Chair. So do they have to self-fund because of the tight news cycle, or the money's just not out there?
Well, it's a couple of things. One is the
tight election cycle,
the
not
tight
cycle.
Window. I mean, normally, you know, you start the nomination papers in April, you get on the ballot, turn them in June, you have 2 months to the primary, and then two more to the general, right? You have this window to raise money. People are also used to being asked for donations during those windows. Well, now we're doing a special election in December, you know, primary in December, and then you have a general in January. It favors the self-funder because it's easier to pull money out of your own pocket than somebody else's. Now, Democrats I've talked to are a little bit unhappy with the timing for the special election the 10th because they feel like the Republicans knew, Governor Walker knew, it would favor, you know, Jarko and Zimmerman because we kind of heard they were going to run for this race anyway if it opened up, that it favors them. They're trying to be creative. I talked to Jennifer Schilling this week about that race, that they'd be creative in how they attack that race. It is a Republican-leaning seat. They will have an uphill battle, she said, when it comes to finances. But those guys are favored a little bit because they've got the money. So I got to push against that. Now, the one exception is Greta Neubauer in the open assembly seat.
For Corey Mason's seat in Racine.
She raised decent money
I think you said $38,000.
She's got Herb Kohl, former U.S. Senator, Lena Honnold, former state chair, a number of kind of figures in the Democratic Party who have given her money. It shows you can raise money in a tight window, but again, it's easier to do it on your own, and they're spending it, especially in the 10th Senate District. We've got mailers flying, accusations about misrepresenting each other's positions. We've got radio ads. There's a political arm of the Realtors, the Wisconsin Homeowners Alliance, that does issue ads. They have TV and radio up backing Jarko right now. This is a full-on, you know, fight for this GOP nomination ahead of Tuesday.
OK. Okay. Wisconsin and I went to Eau Claire, a forum in which 11 Democratic candidates for governor, there's 16 registered, gave statements, answered questions, and tell you what, as a public service, we're going to give you snippets only of their closing remarks from all 11 Democratic candidates for governor who attended the Eau Claire Forum, and I'm not about to pick winners or losers. We're going to let these snippets roll, and then we'll come into JR Stock Picks.
I've opposed Foxconn to their face. Corporate, massive corporate giveaways like that and investing that much in one industry, one company within one industry, impairs everything else that we've been talking about today on this stage. We need a government that represents people. I will be an advocate for regular folks as governor of this state.
And none of us, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, can survive without fresh water. I am not a sitting politician. I am not someone with political experience, but I wear lenses that see individuals in a different way than anyone else. I can bring this type of compassion to Wisconsin.
I said at the beginning that Scott Walker wouldn't be beaten with money. He'll have more than anyone. There's another thing that won't beat Scott Walker. He won't be beaten by simply telling the people of Wisconsin over and over again what's wrong with Scott Walker. We need to rekindle that ethic of public service and promote the common good in our state and give government back to those people in those forgotten places who feel that they are doomed to hold their noses and choose between what they regard as the lesser of evils.
But I think the folks in this audience need to think about this. Who can beat Scott Walker? That's the bottom line. I'll be humble when I say this. I've won 3 statewide elections. I'm guessing that most of you voted for me last April. I won 70 of 72 counties. We must end the divide and conquer that we're facing in the state of Wisconsin. I believe that I am the best candidate to do that.
This governor has corrupted it, and he's turned over the public assets of this state to donors, investors, and corporations. And this governor has turned over the value of work away from wages to the investors. It's time we had a fighting governor in there. Decide who you want on the stage next year in the debate against Scott Walker. Who can most aggressively and articulately prosecute the case against him? And I'll tell you this. Put a fighting sailor named Matt Flynn there, and you'll see what happens. Thank you very much.
The things that bring us together are our values. We want to have sustainable jobs so that our kids don't have to leave the state to find opportunity. Every person in the state should have access to health care. Every child should come into the world with parents having time to care for them, with paid family leave. And we need to protect our clean air and water and our natural resources. I have the energy and the ideas to help build that future of opportunity and fairness for all.
As governor, I will work with our legislature to enact policies that streamline Wisconsin technologies into strong Wisconsin businesses that create good-paying jobs. I know that a governor's most important responsibility is to achieve an economic climate that creates good-paying jobs, and as governor, I will work tirelessly to ensure that every Wisconsinite has the very best job possible.
People don't think they have a voice anymore. Well, I assure you, the people of Wisconsin will know the difference between the two candidates, between me and Scott Walker, because I'm more representative of the people of Wisconsin than he is. And people will know they have my attention. Top-down government doesn't work. Let's let the voters be the loudest voice in our democracy.
If you look at what we've had, $3 billion in a golden parachute to a foreign company, if we took that $3 billion and invested in farming, in education, in healthcare, in our schools, and everything else we talked about today, that would make a great quality of life. And then we wouldn't have to give a golden parachute to a foreign company. They would want to come here because we are the greatest state and we have the greatest worker. We need to put people over politics, people over bad policy, and people over even party, because we have to work together. Firefighters will leave no one behind. I went to the same high school as Governor Walker. We obviously took some different classes. I'm the person that's going to take him on and beat him again. Thank you.
All right, folks, I know exactly what you want. You want someone with progressive values that will beat Scott Walker. You want that more than anything else on the planet. I'm a business guy with progressive values. I'm a former middle linebacker who likes to hit people, and I can't wait to hit Scott Walker. Nearly everybody in Wisconsin wants somebody to take a business-like approach to solving the complex problems in Wisconsin. That sounds a lot like me.
If there's three pillars of my campaign, there's education. What's the second one? Ethics. What's the third one? Transparency. Very good. The other thing is, I don't want your money. Someone said we can't beat Scott Walker with money. That's exactly right. So if you have $100, keep it. If you have $10, keep it. I literally will take no contributions. We are going to win this state with $0 in common sense.
Okay, we're in overtime because of 11 Democratic candidates. Stock pick rising.
Mining bill. Walker signs the mining bill. Ends the kind of so-called moratorium on sulfide mining. Tom Tiffany, state senator, backed the bill, says a new mine in 3 to 5 years. We'll see. Governor Walker's new pitch is it'll keep young people in Wisconsin. We'll see if that happens, too.
Okay, just a P.S. When I interviewed Representative Swearingen on his pitch to lower the drinking age, I said, have you heard, he's from Oneida County, have you heard of any mining companies? And he said, I'm sorry, I haven't. So that's just a P.S. Okay, mixed.
So Leah Vukmir, so one outgrowth is John Doe is that Leah Vukmir's emails were captured as part of it. This is a great political issue for Leah Vukmir to use in this primary because she knows what the base hates. The base does not like the GAB, doesn't like invasions of privacy. Hers was invaded. It's a good issue to use for her. The flip side is Kevin Nicholson has a pullout this week or a memo on a poll suggesting that he's ahead right now in the primary, which kind of goes against the conventionals in the Capitol of Leah has the edge. That poll, though, comes on the heels of $2.3 million in TV ads between October 1st and I think last month, pro-Nicholson stuff. So it's not a clear picture of where the race is at, but kind of puts a pause in the narrative. But big picture, look at Alabama.
Yes.
There is some warning signs out there. Now, Republicans try and say, look, it's Alabama. Roy Moore is a horribly flawed candidate. You can't draw a conclusion from there to here. Same with Virginia. Virginia's not a blue state, they say. But the one thing you should look for, two things, these trends we've seen in these special elections, minority turnout is up. Republicans are seeing educated suburban women flee. If those two trends hold up elsewhere, that's a bad thing for Republicans next year.
Okay, and falling.
Residential electric customers, so Foxconn to feed the plant.
Yep.
ATC wants to build a $140 million transmission line. You and I pick up that. Now, it's a couple pennies a bill to pay for the line. It is needed for plants to draw that much power. But what's interesting is, one, Tony Evers now is calling it the Foxconn tax. It's another thing to say, hey, you and I don't get this. These guys are being treated special.
Yeah.
And oh, by the way, speaking of that, there's going to be another new four-lane road just to feed the plant for local traffic. I mean, it adds
driverless vehicles. Yes,
adds up after a while. The ways that we are catering to one company to bring now, granted, it could be a boom for southeastern Wisconsin and maybe the rest of the state, but another way we're catering toward Foxconn to bring this plant here.
And so the bill keeps running. You have $3 billion in
aid. $3 billion.
However, $700 million in local aids, and now $140 million.
Don't forget
to
the
give them electricity.
$250 million in borrowing for the expansion of 94 North South.
Thank you.
The local road, the 140.
Yep.
Price tag's going up.
Yep. Okay. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And a programming note, next week I'm going to be spoiling grandkids. J.R. and Patrick Marley of the Journal Sentinel will be doing Rewind. That's Rewind for December 1-5.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.